Zullo. He is the congressman from the 16th Congressional District here in Illinois. First of all, Congressman, great to see you. Hope you're doing well.
Doing fine. The snow's melting.
Yes, it is.
It's so much for global warming. it gets to be 20 degrees and people are ready to go swimming, you know.
We have limited time with the congressman, and you are welcome to call at 815-874-8255. First and foremost, Congressman, your thoughts on the United States government's response to the catastrophe in Haiti.
I think that we're doing everything we can. I'm particularly pleased, and this is coming from a Republican, that Bill Clinton was named special envoy to Haiti early into the Obama administration, and he had effectively put together about 55 governments and non-government organizations to raise $500 million to rebuild the infrastructure in Haiti and to teach people how to fish as opposed to handing them fish. So it's a if things work out what Truman was to the Marshall Plan, Bill Clinton could be to Haiti. And he's got a real heart for it. He's working, obviously, with former President George W. Bush. And it doesn't hurt that Bill Clinton's, and I say this sincerely, that his wife is the Secretary of State, because you can't get much more immediate response than that. But, you know, I've heard some criticism going on. And, but, you know, if, for example, why did it take 5 days to 4 days to airdrop water? Well, it's because a lot of people get hurt. Those are pallets that fall. And a lot of people have been hurt in the past by food airdrops. So they're doing whatever they can. Plus, a lot of local people, there's just tremendous response going on.
Should Haitians in this country illegally be granted temporary protected status while their country recovers?
If that's putting deportation on hold, that's fine with me. Where are you going to send them back? How are you going to get them there? But, that's a very unfortunate situation, but we still have to enforce our laws.
In the political arena, all eyes today are focused on the race for the U.S. Senate seat in Massachusetts held by the late Teddy Kennedy. Should Republican State Senator Scott Brown defeat Democrat Attorney General Martha Coakley, what message would that send to the Senate and President Obama about health care reform?
Well, I think if he even gets close, if it's a cliffhanger, the message is that Massachusetts, believe it or not, is speaking for the nation on health care, and Americans do not want government-run medical services. I think it is a referendum on that one issue when the man says, I'll be the 41st vote to vote against it, and that's what you need to block it in the Senate. But there's something else about Scott Brown. He's very much of a populist. He's not real conservative. I mean, he's not, well, no one's as conservative as I am. But he's a person who would be considered to be a moderate Republican, very strong on the fiscal issues. But everybody who disagrees with the liberal agenda has coalesced behind Scott Brown. I think that's extremely important, because it shows the ability for him to span the various philosophies of the Republican Party. And he's at least if you believe the polls, he's pulling the independents by 2-1. But I think it's exciting. And the message is that you can't legislate and ignore the people. And that's what's going on in the Senate now, also the House.
Our guest is Congressman Don Manzullo. Congressman Manzullo will be here until 10 o'clock. We have time for your phone calls at 815-874-8255. Hi, Luther. You're on WNTA. Say hi to Congressman Don Manzullo.
Good morning.
Morning, Luther. How are you today?
Okay. I'm looking forward to another pasta and politics at the end of the month.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
How much is that per family? Like,
it's $10 a person, $25 a family.
Yeah, but it's a good value anyway. Okay, so everything that I see on TV is all about health care. There are things that aren't getting covered right now, like where's cap and trade? Are they going to try and slide that in when no one's looking? By they, I mean, well,
the Senate.
We'll just leave that out of it. And you know, the amnesty. Have they shot their load, so to speak? Do they have the political capital to try and muscle anything like that through?
The best sources that I can find is that cap and trade won't even come up in the Senate, but that there may be an immigration, so-called immigration reform bill, whose purpose is to grant amnesty to illegals.
And yeah, I don't know what the current form of it is, but do you think that pre-2010 election cycle that it's going to, any irreparable damage is going to be done to the, oh, I don't know, national sovereignty?
Well, Luther, if you're asking if granting amnesty to X million people who are here illegally, and then encouraging them to organize and vote for one particular party, I have big problems with that. Was that the intent of your question?
Yeah, it does. Well, and Don, you know, I never have to wonder what you're up to, because I know where you stand on things. I know what your values are, but I don't. But you know, it's a big Congress, and I don't know everyone else. You know, are the Republicans going to hold the line on this, or are we going to have people like? And I don't know where Mark Kirk is now on cap and trade.
Well, he's repented. That's about the best word I can say. I told him, I said, that's the dumbest vote you ever took in your life. He said, I agree. But, you know, people make mistakes. That was a dumb mistake on his part. And
yeah.
And he said that he would never vote for it again. And I take him at his word.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, Don, make sure you keep changing the filters in your drinking water in the office. There are people probably always trying to put Kool-Aid in it.
I think. All right.
Thanks.
Thank you, Luther. Good to talk to you. Once again, our guest is Congressman Don Manzullo from the 16th District here in Illinois. Our telephone number is 815-874-8255. Getting back to health care, Congressman, what, in your opinion, will a reconciled health care bill look like? What will the finished product
look
like?
Well, there are three things that can happen with regard to the so-called, I don't call it health care reform, I call it government-run health care. The first is that the House would adopt the Senate version, lock, stock, and barrel, and then it would go on to the President for a signature. That's not going to happen because, well, first of all, the people in the House don't like the Louisiana Purchase, they don't like the Nebraska Compromise, and they don't like the Florida cop-out. Florida Medicare Advantage seniors got exempted, and everybody else who has Medicare Advantage will have their program end across the nation. Then, of course, the issue of abortion. It's a joke in the Senate version, and the Stupak Amendment is very, very strong in the House, so that taxpayers' money are in no way used to perform abortions. So the House would not adopt the Senate version. You could have the House amend the Senate version with one amendment, and then have one vote in the House, then send it back to the Senate. For a vote, or three, you could have what's called a conference, where essentially it's almost as if you're starting all over again. But Nancy Pelosi said, I don't care what happens in Massachusetts, I'm going to push this through the House. That's arrogance gone to seed. What do you mean she doesn't care what happens? She doesn't care about public opinion? Is this the old philosophy, let the public be damned and I'm going to do whatever I want? That's outrageous. But that's the type of arrogance that's under fire now in that election in Massachusetts. People are just sick and tired of politicians who think they can live one lifestyle that's different than the voters, who think that they can go out there and make cute remarks. I mean, you don't sit there, if you're a member of Congress from Illinois, and diss the Packers or the Bears. You don't do that. And that dumb remark that she made about Boston, she said, well, what do you expect me to do, stand outside and shake hands? And she said, yeah. I mean, I still have calluses on my I always do that. I love to do that.
Congressman, from your perspective, what ultimately would curb the spiraling cost of health care if it's not a public option?
Well, you've got to do, first of all, the public option won't curb the cost of it. You've got to have some type of reasonable medical liability insurance reform. I mean, here we are at the state line, and you go right across the border to Wisconsin, and the cost of medical liability insurance is half. Half. I know of physicians here in the Rockford area who just said they're in their mid-50s. They weren't ready to retire yet. They said, that's it. You know, why should we work for insurance companies and have to pay the incredible premiums? A neurosurgeon in Rockford, I was talking to one, pays over $500,000 a year in medical liability insurance. Now, we know that when mistakes are made, there ought to be appropriate ways to compensate people who, you know, God forbid, should end up in a wheelchair because of medical liability issue. There are ways to do that. You can create special funds for doing that, the way you create special funds for disasters and catastrophes. And so you can take care of the legitimate claims of people who are injured, and at the same time bring down the tremendous cost. Now, what it also does is, it's not just the cost of the premiums, but it's defensive medicine. Defensive medicine is where all kinds of unnecessary tests are ordered, and that runs about $25 to $40 billion a year in medical savings that you could pick up right away. We are very close to a lot of physicians and a lot of physician groups in town, and there are some extraordinary things that these people are already doing that aren't even on the radar, where with electronic records, they have a way of monitoring the exact care on a real-time basis that their patients are getting, making sure they're getting exactly what they need and nothing more to add to the cost, at the same time monitoring so that the results are better.
We have a few people who want to talk to you, Congressman. Hi, Dave. You're on WNTA with Congressman Don Manzullo.
Good morning, and thank you, sir, for listening to us. First off, I've called Pelosi's office 20 times. Not once have I been able to talk to anybody. I just get switched over to her complaint line. Two, did Pelosi take two 737s and a private Learjet for you know who, and 17 Democrats to Copenhagen? That's my first question. And the second question, Mr. Mark Mayhew crunched the numbers on the cash for clunkers, and he came up with, it costs us taxpayers $20,000 plus for every car that was bought. Is that true or false, too?
Well, I don't know how many airplanes Nancy Pelosi took to Copenhagen. She actually asked me to go with her because I'm the senior Republican on the International Relations Subcommittee that deals with global environment. And I said, no, I wasn't interested in going there because I thought it'd be a joke, which it was. They all had to leave early because of the blizzards. With regard to clash for clunkers, I've seen other figures that the cost of administering the program was nowhere near that. But the plan that I had dealt with a straight point of sale voucher to buy a new automobile, and you didn't have to worry about the clunkers. It was the paperwork on the clunkers that cost all the money.
Larry, you're on, or pardon me, Richard, you're on WNTO with Congressman Don Manzullo. Hi, Richard.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I got a question. I know the House and the Senate passed an extension back in November. Hello?
Extension of
unemployment benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go down to the unemployment office here in Rockford, they don't know a thing about it. All they say is, I don't know. I don't know. Any question you ask them, I don't know. Now, can you tell me where to go or who to talk to?
Yeah, if you want to call our office, you're unemployed now, Richard, and drawing unemployment?
Correct.
How many weeks have you been on unemployment? You
52.
Know? How many?
52.
And I think in Illinois we're up to 70, I think. But if you want to call our office, 394-1231, ask for Kathy. And if for some reason Kathy's not up on it, just ask for Rich.
Well, now, give me that phone number again, would you?
It's 394-1231. 815.
394 what?
394-1231.
1231.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Nobody there could tell you when yours would run out? Is that what you you'd ask that question?
That was my question.
Hmm.
And I, you know, my landlord wants me to sign a 6-month lease, and it takes time to get money out of my 401k.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, unemployment office, they just don't know a thing about it, and it's getting a little tiresome.
Well, call his office, Richard, and good luck to you. It's 10 minutes until 10 o'clock. Our guest is Congressman Don Manzullo. Until 10 o'clock, our phone number is 815-874-8255. Larry, you're on WNTA. Good morning.
Yeah, Don, I just got to talk about South Court Street down there. You know where you own that property on Cedar and Court before they started the federal building?
Who?
Who owns it?
Who owned it?
You know, you know where Colonial Bread was?
That's down Lou Back Road was there.
Well, no, but this is down next to the federal courthouse, because when I was checking, and someone told me that they're going to have 1,600 people working in that federal courthouse. Would you be for to build this new hotel they're talking about just west of the new federal courthouse?
Well, somebody's going to have to build it. It has to be done with private capital.
Well, but you know, we're going to talk in the way Sweeney's got that. We need a little of this Obama money. Are you for it to bring this money in here? Because this is going to be really something. I go back when Leo Allen was in, I go through all these congressmen. It gets near election time. You were out a Crusader Clinic a week ago, and we're talking, and I went to a little thing out on the west side, and they said, listen, Manzullo's going to pump, has to get this money going, or you may have to end up losing this time. So I'm just going to listen. If you think we really need this civic center downtown and a hotel, and thank you very much.
Well, we went after and worked very closely with Senator Durbin to build that courthouse, because that's a legitimate federal function. It's one of the few federal functions that we have in the Constitution. And sometimes by way of bonds, et cetera, but if you use, I mean, first of all, it's not federal money, it's taxpayers' money. And the nation's already about $12 trillion in debt, and I don't think the people of Rockford want their name to go on to a note to pay to build a hotel downtown. If it's such a good deal and the thing will work, then let private enterprise do it.
Philip, you're on WNTA with Congressman Don Manzullo. Philip, good morning to you.
Good morning, and good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
I have a quick question. I have a son who is unemployed right now, and unfortunately, in his earlier young adult years, he got into some trouble, legal trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of companies, when he goes to look for employment, who say that they've replied to him that they have government contracts, and that because they have government contracts, they wouldn't be able to bring in someone who was a felon. And you know, I know about, you know, sensitive areas like the Defense Department contracts and stuff like that. I can understand that, but I was wanting to ask the congressman: is there some sort of unwritten rule? Because I know that the federal government gives tax breaks to employers to hire persons who may have felony records. And then there, you know, it's almost like a double-edged sword that the government will give tax breaks to employers to hire a felon, and then the employer will turn around and tell a felon that.
I'm not aware of a tax break to hire a felon, but it may be there because they're trying to get, you know, it depends. When I practiced law years ago, I represented an 18-year-old that ended up with a felony, a conviction of burglary. And that kid really, really suffered. And finally, after years, he was able to work through it. And he's now a very eminent professor at an East Coast college. He's absolutely brilliant. And so I guess it depends upon the nature of it, how recent the felony is. But, you know, I would like to look more into that. If you want to give our office a call, 394-1231. Best thing to do is really send an email and just to lay it out. And I would send the email to if you go to the webpage.
Yes, sir.
Or either that or just, you know, if you just want to write a letter, get it over to the Rockford office.
Okay.
And get it into Pam's hand. Pam is our district director.
Okay.
And then tell her that, put in the letter there that you had talked to me on the radio. Lay out specifically what it is, and then we'll take a look at it and find out, first of all, what the status of the law is, and second of all, exactly what felonies it is that people are being excluded on. If it's, you know, the situation I gave when her 18-year-old got in trouble, there was no physical violence. I mean, there was nobody present at the time. Nobody was personally injured, that type of thing, as opposed to an all-out assault upon somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. Good luck. We have about 5 minutes with Congressman Don Manzullo. Should you have any questions or comments? Congressman, as the country emerges from recession, what more can Congress do to facilitate job creation and job growth?
Well, the first thing we have to do is we have to stop going backwards. You can't pass cap and trade and expect companies to continue expanding their businesses here in the United States. It doesn't work. You can't pass a health care bill and slap enormous mandates on employers and expect them to expand. And you can't have the EPA be in charge of regulating carbon emissions, which again really smack at the small business people. You can't pass all these types of bills that increase mandates and expenses for employers on one hand, then turn right around and say, well, now we're going to concentrate on jobs and have a job summit. That's the type of things that we're seeing. So what we have to do is, first of all, we need to have tax incentives to put Americans back to work. I've always believed, Ken, and I know it's correct, we have to restart the supply chains of manufacturing in order to have a recovery. People have to be doing things. They have to go back to work. People don't want the government to create jobs. They want their old job back. And there are a lot of jobs that are there. We had come out with several proposals, including, you know, tax incentives to make it cheaper for Americans to manufacture in this country. I got in a big fight several years ago when I chaired the Small Business Committee, and we actually aced the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, which was a real David and Goliath. But I insisted, and Congress agreed, that if you manufacture in the United States, you can get up to a 9% tax break by manufacturing here as opposed to overseas. And that law phases it in. It's now, I think, at 6%. We want to increase it right away to 9% to decrease the amount of taxes that a manufacturer would pay if he manufactured here. That would help keep jobs here at the same time. The second thing is that we need to extend the so-called Bush tax cuts. People are saying, well, there's something wrong with it. Well, if we don't take care of the death tax, which is yet to be fixed, in a year you're going to find people with very, very modest factories and farms giving up the 40% of that back to the government. So we have to be in a position where everything we do is geared to allowing the small business person and the major manufacturer to have as much money as possible. And you don't do that by going out and again and say we're going to increase the taxes on everybody that earns more than $250,000. That's a lot of money. However, that also represents about 60% of the total number of employees in small businesses has a boss that earns about $250,000 a year. And whenever you tax that person, that's less money that goes into the needed capital that's necessary in order for job creation.
President Obama's been in office about a year. What has he done right?
Well, some of my Republican colleagues will disagree with me on this. Sending men and women to war is a very weighty decision. And even though he ran on the fact that the troops should be withdrawn from Iraq and go into Afghanistan, things change. I mean, there was a massive bombing in Kabul that occurred yesterday. People didn't think it would happen. He took time to come up to a decision, defended his decision. And you're talking about the lives of men and women. And so it took him 2 months to come to that decision. It's also $1 billion per year for every 1,000 troops that we send overseas. And so he took the time to make the decision, as opposed to saying, yeah, we're automatically going to follow the wishes of the commanders, who really wanted 60,000 troops to go in right away on it. Now, whether or not he made the right decision, only history will determine that.
Great to see you. Stay healthy, and I'll see you again soon.
Good to see you. Thank you.
10 o'clock at 1330 WNTA Rockford. We now join CNN News in progress.
After working on a pile of rubble at a university for hours, they reached a young woman who